Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
He just formed a fucking wall.
O'Neal deep in the post. Lots of contact there. Oh, what a block by Wallace. What a jump ball.
This team's down 4, 12-8, 7-38 to play the first half. Burst from Rodney. Stuck into the rim. Count up, baby, and a foul.
Reggie inside for Andre. Oh. And a dynamite dunk.
Hello, Pistons fans, and welcome to another edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast. It's episode 86. Aaron Johnson hosting today, and joining me a pair of two great guests. First, a writer from the website Palace of Pistons, Jacob Rogers, joining me here on the show today. And then a special guest from The Athletic, the Detroit Pistons beat writer for The Athletic, James Edwards, joining us as well. And James, you might hear a little bit of some car noises. James just came from hooping, and he might have worn a cardigan. It may have also been with Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin. We don't know the full details yet. But Jacob and James, thanks for joining me here today.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, I hope the car noises aren't too bad. If they are, I can put the phone to my ear. But no, I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, well, and then we also got Jacob Rogers here, but we'll hop into the first topic today, and we're going to start with Andre Drummond report, a report from Vincent Ellis in an article he wrote about Andre Drummond and a max contract situation. He stated that Drummond feels that he wants a max contract, and he's also reported that Drummond and his representatives have wanted to have contract extension discussions with the Pistons. Basically, though, it's kind of an interesting situation due to the Pistons' cap sheet and where the rest of the NBA could be next offseason in free agency, with there not being too much money to spend and the Pistons themselves not having a ton of free money to give. But the question comes down to, considering that situation, should the Pistons be looking to give Andre Drummond a max contract here? And James, I'll start with you.
I mean, It's a touchy subject because he has been with the organization for quite some time. He's performed. I mean, say what you want about Andre. I know there's different pockets of fans that have different opinions, but I mean, he was the one guy that kind of represented Detroit during their most down years. He went to All-Star games, led the league in statistical categories. Like, he did a lot for Detroit during a tough time, and I could see why they why they're going to consider it, and why Goris is obviously a fan of Andre's. Do they give him one? I don't think they do. I was there when Andre talked about all players think they should deserve a max, and he's right. They should. They put in a lot of work, and everybody should think they're the best at what they do. And I'd be surprised if he gets one from Detroit. And if another team doesn't offer him one and Detroit gives him comparable money, I could see him back in the Pistons uniform, but I wouldn't be surprised if a team or two threw it at him next summer.
Your thoughts, Jacob?
I mean, I'm with James. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if another team threw him a max deal, especially a team that's rebuilding or a team that has a lot of cap room to work with. But My thing with Andre is that he's always shown that he seems like he's loyal to the Pistons franchise. He's been here for, this is what, his eighth year now. He's clearly shown that he loves it in Detroit. My only fear as a Pistons fan is seeing Andre go to another team and excel even more than he has in Detroit. I know that Detroit can throw him like a 5-year, $190 million max, where other teams can only go 140, but I honestly don't think that Detroit will end up throwing in the full $190 million deal. And that's a risk that, you know, the ownership and the front office has to take. But when it comes down to it, Detroit is cap strapped. I mean, next year, barring, say, Andre does for some reason take his player option, Detroit is still looking at $63 million in cap holds between guys like Reggie Jackson and Langston Galloway and Thon Maker. Like, they got to figure out what to do with all those guys. My only thing is, I don't want Andre to get a big deal and then his game declines.
I think it's something that really kind of is going to be determined by how the season plays out. I think if the Pistons struggle, and whether it's Andre's fault or not, if the Pistons struggle, are they going to want to run it back with the same style of roster with the two bigs? Blake's still under contract, and then if they re-up on Drummond, they'd still be building through two bigs, and a re-signing of Drummond would continue to put their cap space at two positions in the NBA that I think nowadays are the least trendiest. Teams are going more and more for cheaper center options, and the game is really played by your point. You know, the stars in the league are the point guards, the shooting guards, the small forwards. And yes, there are some star centers, but the star centers in the league today aren't the same kind of center that Andre Drummond is. Drummond's a down low guy, rim runner, garbage hoop pick guy. Meanwhile, your Jokic's, your Embiid's, those are guys that kind of do it all everywhere on the floor and are multifaceted in that standpoint. But for me, I don't know if I would feel comfortable if the Pistons gave him the max, just seeing how their money has been tied up for so long. Do they want to continue to tie it up there? Or, you know, do they want to try to maneuver money so that they're able to go get a star point guard or a big name guard? Can they even do that? Will that even be an option for them? There's so many questions that have to play out for that to even be a possibility. But the way that Drummond does get a max or should get a max is if he plays at the level that he did play at in the second half of last season, right when he came back from, I believe it was a concussion. I can't remember what team he picked it up against. But once he came back from that injury, he was just a different player. And he definitely struggled in the playoffs, and that was very easy to see. But during that second stretch of the regular season, he was a completely different player and definitely looked like a max contract level guy. So if he's that good for a full season, I'm not sure you can turn him away. But I know, James, you mentioned you could see a couple teams throwing a max contract at him. Does any team come to mind right now, or do you just think there will be a team eventually that wants to give that money to Drummond?
I mean, a team that comes to mind is, off the top of my head, is New York. I think they've had interest in Andre before. I think that they are trying to build a playoff contender. Obviously, this year they tried to piece together a team to the best of their abilities after striking and missing out on some guys, but they gave them all short-term deals. So there's money there. If they see Andre as a guy that they could possibly build around, I don't want to say build around, but at least solidify that center position as they try to turn the corner as an organization, that's a possibility. I'd say that's a team that comes to mind. Again, I think there are some teams that are maybe closer to competing for a title that could use Drummond's services, but I'm not sure if they can or are willing to throw the kind of money he'll get, even if it's not a max, to get him. But I mean, a team like New York comes to mind when you ask me that.
One thing I want to ask you, James, is I talked to Aaron about this about 10 minutes ago. say Detroit's season this year doesn't go how everybody thinks it's going to go, and Andre's still commanding that kind of money, would you or could you see Detroit possibly moving on from Blake and trading him elsewhere and then giving Andre a bigger deal? Because what comes to my mind is that Blake, after his contract's up and he's eligible for an extension, he'll be 33 years old, and he's probably going to be looking at something like a deal that Chris Paul has. I don't know if the Pistons want to deal with having a guy that's 34, 35, making $40 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think it makes logical sense if Detroit gets to the All-Star break and they're barely in the playoff picture, say 8 seed, 7 seed, maybe only a game out from being out of the playoffs, or they're out of the playoffs altogether with what many believe is the easiest schedule in the NBA from the start of the season to the All-Star break. To me, it's logical to then pivot, start the rebuild there, because clearly things aren't working and they're not going to work, and you might as well try to get your bang for your buck while you can. Now, on the other hand, the only thing that's really ought to come out, that's come out of the Pistons camp, whether it be owner Tom Gores, the front office, is they want to build a winner. They want to build a culture. So to me, even if things go south, I'm not sure that they are going to do that just based off the fact that I don't know if they'll be able to build a better team quickly. So it's interesting. If it gets to that point, I'm really, really interested to see how they start talking about the future and the present. But right now, I really do believe that they have no interest in rebuilding. Of course, they could be blowing smoke, and they know right now that if things don't go well by the deadline, that they're going to shift gears. But from all I've been told and they've said publicly, that's not the plan. But I think logically, if they're not good by the deadline, why would you continue yeah. with that roster and not try to capitalize on any assets you can get?
Well, moving on to a player that has certainly sparked some interest over the first two preseason games for Detroit, and definitely sparked interest when he signed with the team over the offseason. Derrick Rose has looked very good in the first two games of the preseason with Detroit. Just looking at his statistics, 14 points, 4.5 assists, 2.5 rebounds, and the stats don't really matter in preseason. It's more about just the feel of how they're playing. And with that second unit, it's comparable to Ish Smith with his fast style of play and his high energy. But that second unit, based off of Rose's floor running and floor general, I don't even know what I'm saying right now, actually. But I can't even put together the words. But the way Derrick Rose has played, he's looked very strong. And yes, it's helped that he's had Luke Kennard alongside him. But Derrick Rose has sparked a lot of interest with the team, and he's looked good. He's backing it up. Does that bring a little bit of a ceiling raiser to the Pistons season with the way that he's played?
Yeah. For Derrick, I thought he was really, really good last night. In game one, I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was I think part of it was his first game in Detroit. He wanted to kind of show the fans that he's arrived, and I thought he kind of was a little too active early, took some tough shots, rushed into some shots, rushed the offense a little bit. But last night I thought he was really good. He found his legs. He was composed when attacking the hoop. I want to see a couple more opponents, because against Orlando, when I thought he struggled, that's a very long team. And he struggled early on to get his shot off. But against Dallas, who's not quite as long in that second unit, obviously aside from Boban, but he's not quick enough once Rose gets past him that he can get that. He did well. But I think last night showed what Pistons fans wanted to see from Derrick Rose. There's an explosiveness there. There's some excitement there. There's a guy that can go get you a bucket, which the Pistons have very few of and had very few of last year. So far, he's checked the boxes. He's come as advertised. But the big question with Derrick, again, is can you count on Derrick to be that throughout the course of an 82-game season? And you really can't tell until the season comes, until midway through the season. Derrick could play out of his mind for a month and a half, 2 months. And if he's injured, then I think it really hurts Detroit moving forward. So I think you're seeing the right things from Derrick Rose. But again, the big thing with Derrick Rose is making it through an 82-game season.
Yeah, from what I saw, I totally agree with you, James. You know, like you said, in the first game, he kind of rushed his shots and rushed his sets, and I think he didn't really look like he was running with the offense fluently, even though he even came out and said, you know, the coaching staff is letting me just go out and run, and that's the way I like to play. But last night, he looked like a completely different player. Everything he did just seemed a lot smoother, you know, even when he got into the pick and roll and he was running sets with Luke and all that stuff. Everything just looked really, really smooth. But what I think I like the most out of Derek compared to Ish is that, like you said, Derek is a bucket getter. Last year, especially last year and late last year, Ish looked very, very tentative when he was attacking the basket. He'd go in and you'd see him just kind of backpedal back out or try to set the offense or get a trailer or something. Where Rose, if he knows he has a shot and he can take it, he's going to take it. And that's something that Detroit's needed. I mean, you even saw last night when they ran the quote unquote, what people are calling it, the death lineup, where it was him, Reggie, Luke, Blake, and Dre. He was running out there and even finding Reggie for open shots. Reggie was almost playing a shooting guard. And it actually helped, I think, solidify that Reggie still has some game in there, especially how he came out the first game and then the first half of yesterday.
I think it's interesting to look at the Pistons bench and with Derrick Rose and Luke Kennard, even though I've been a firm believer that Luke Kennard belonged in the starting lineup, but with him coming off the bench with Derrick Rose, I think in the first game, you kind of saw, you guys mentioned Derrick Rose trying to assert himself. You kind of saw Luke Kennard take a backhand seat to that, and he didn't get up as many shots as you would like. But then in game two, Rose settled in. Kennard was put in a better position to succeed. He was a little bit more aggressive finding his shot. I mean, you talk about that step back three-pointer he had in the second half where he was just in that groove. He led the team in scoring with 19 points, but Rose and Kennard together in that second unit projects to be pretty good. And yeah, even though Detroit has some stuff to figure out with the rest of their second unit, I think Markieff Morris is a safe bet at the backup four spot. But whether it's going to be Langston Galloway or Svema Hajduk getting those other wing minutes, is Christian Wood going to make the roster? Is he going to get those backup 5 minutes, or will Thon Maker get them? But even while they try to figure out those questions with Rose and Kennard and Markieff Morris, that bench is looking pretty good. And is it feasible to feel that they could have one of the best benches in the league next year, or this year now? I mean, the season, with the season here now, it's.
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility, like you said, Rose and Kennard together. I mean, that could bring you 30 plus points a night just between those two. The big thing is the holes in that second unit. Like you said, there's going to be staples in the second unit. That's going to be Derrick Rose, Luke Kennard, and Markieff Morris. The other swingman spot and the center spot, I think, are going to be based off feel, based off kind of rhythm. I don't think Dwayne is settled into it's going to be Langston every night getting those minutes, or it's going to be Thon getting those minutes every night. I think they're going to get the first crack at it. But if they struggle in the first half or struggle for a series of games, I think Svi's going to get a chance. And if he can take that step where he can be an effective, maybe get you 6 points a game, 8 points a game, something, shoot high 30s from three, I think that helps. And then whatever you get from the center position is key. I mean, it looks like Christian Wood is just active whenever he's on the floor. He obviously is a work in progress. He struggles guarding bigger bigs that can shoot from the perimeter. He's not a great screen setter, so those are some things he has to shore up. But I mean, there's possibility there. There's a lot of unknown there, and even unknown with Derrick Rose. Again, you just don't know what you're going to get from him. But there's something to get excited about with that second unit because of Derrick Rose and Luke Kennard and what they've shown so far.
I definitely think, you know, pivoting off of what James said, you know, Derrick, Luke, and Markieff are definitely staples in there. But bench-wise, I think this is one of the deepest benches Detroit's had in a few years. I mean, you look behind Derrick Rose, your third-string point guard, Tim Frazier, but even though he's played some garbage minutes these first two preseason games, Frazier's looked, I mean, pretty decent for especially a third-string point guard. He's gone out there. He's been quick. He's ran the offense. He's played some tight D. He's been able to find teammates in his limited minutes. But this team is just a lot deeper than I have seen in the past couple of years. And I think for me, that's what's most exciting about that bench unit is just how much deeper it can be compared to what we've seen in the past where, you know, Coach Casey or at the time Van Gundy only had 3-4 guys he can go to every night off the bench where now if one guy's not playing well, next man up, there's somebody else that can fill that void. And I feel like that's what's really, really exciting about that bench unit.
Just to add to that, I do think that there's potential to be a deep bench. I think the thing is, though, no one really knows if that bench can be deep. I know people are excited about Svi, but Svi, I mean, if he wants the Langston job, it's there to go take, and he has
He hasn't proved himself.
Yeah. Don and Christian, Christian's been exciting, but he has to prove himself. I thought Don played better than he did last night.
Mm-hmm.
And then behind that, Kyrie, I mean, he's not getting many minutes. So there's whatever happens behind closed doors is obviously not enough for Dwayne to play. It's, I think there's a chance for that bench to be really, really good and surprise some people. But those young guys really got to kind of step up. And I think that's kind of been the underlying story all offseason. I think Detroit, obviously, with their signings improved. But they were going to really take that next step if those young guys kind of came out of nowhere and improved. Whether it was Bruce come back and add something to the offense, whether it was Fee come and become another sharp shooter off the bench, or if that was Kyrie, I think that's what can take them over the top is kind of a surprise from one of those second-year guys.
I think for me, you know, watching, you know, talking about if Bruce was able to add anything offensively in these first couple of games, he hasn't looked like he's added much to his game, especially shooting the ball wise. He hasn't looked like he's really comfortable with the shot yet. As last night, he passed a wide open three, and Blake and Casey both kind of lit him up a little bit. Like, you got to shoot that. But I think the one thing I like seeing out of Bruce on the offensive end is that he's more willing to attack the cup now. You know, you saw the past couple of games he's been going to the rim a lot more and finishing strong. But at the same time, he's had a couple of those plays where he's looked like Bruce from last year, where he goes to the cup and just kind of throws it up and it ends up being, you know, 4-on-3 or 5-on-4 break or something. But I, like you said, James, I definitely think that bench has potential to be deep. I mean, I know I said that I think that they're the deepest bench that we've had in a while, but like you said, it's more of a potential thing than anything.
Yeah, I think that growth with Bruce is a lot of people talked about, myself included, how he needed to grow his outside shot over the offseason. But the other underrated aspect of his game that needed to improve was his ability to take it inside and finish inside against contact, against length. And maybe he's not shooting the ball, he's not hunting for shots from outside so far, but he does show a little bit more confidence going inside. Whether he's, you know, eventually giving it off, he had that nice lob to Dre against Dallas in transition, or he's going up himself. He's athletic enough, and he has a strong enough body that as long as he's working on his touch at the rim, he has the athleticism to finish and finish well inside. So that's that other key area of his offensive game that needs to improve, while his shooting does most definitely, but his finishing also needs to grow as well. So maybe we won't see a Bruce that's going to shoot, you know, low mid-30s from the three-point line this year. But I think you're going to see a little bit more of an aggressive Bruce driving inside, and that'll create opportunities on the outside for your Tony Snells, if you're, you know, your Luke Kennard, your Langston Galloway's, those spot-up shooters, Reggie Jackson, those kind of guys will get more looks with Bruce Brown being able to confidently drive and kick or finish at the rim. But moving on from talking about the young guys for a few minutes, we'll talk about the oldest guy on the roster as of now, Joe Johnson. And James, this is probably a question that you'll be able to answer just because you're around the team pretty much on a daily basis. But from talking early on at Media Day, where it was Blake, Andre, I think Derrick Rose talked third, and then Joe Johnson talked fourth, and the way the team has talked about him, it just seems like Joe Johnson, at least from the outside looking in, is a lock to make the roster. And with him being on a non-guaranteed deal and the way that Christian Wood has played, that's kind of an interesting situation, because I think a lot of people, myself included, feel that the Pistons need depth at the center spot, but they can't keep Christian Wood if they keep Joe Johnson on the roster unless they make another move. So Joe Johnson, what's the deal with him? Is he a lock to make the team, or is it still a competition?
Yeah, I'm torn on that. I see it two ways. Joe is a veteran presence. Joe is a guy that commands respect in the locker room. Joe's a guy that's been through big games. Joe is a professional through and through. And I personally have no issue if you want to use the 15th roster spot on that kind of guy. I think that's important as somebody who's played sports, having a locker room where everybody gets along, where the morale is high, where somebody can kind of temper expectations and or even boost you when you're down. I really find importance in that. And if you want to use your 15th roster spot on that, I have no knock against it. On the other hand, like you said, I'm not sure that Don is the answer at backup center. And I think Christian Wood has the potential to be the answer. I'm not going to say he is because it's been two preseason games. One, he's looked really, really good, and one, he's looked okay. But again, I do think there's potential there, and it's worth, to me, keeping him and finding out if there is instead of letting him go somewhere else, especially with Andre's contract situation coming up. You just never know. You could have a low-cost center that that has a high upside. You just never know. So I'm torn on that. I don't know what's exactly going to play out. I'm interested. I still, in the back of my head, think that maybe they deal Kyrie. Again, this is not sourced. This is not anything. This is just my opinion. Maybe they deal Kyrie because there is a log jam on the perimeter and he hasn't beat out Langston or Svi, it seems like. So that way you can keep the veteran presence and a little bit of depth up front. Excuse me, and still not really hurt your team in that regard. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I don't right now. It's really hard to tell.
I think the question the Pistons have to weigh is: do they trust Thon Maker enough? Because if they trust Thon and they feel that they can slide Markieff up to the five, then I guess they don't need Christian Wood. But the way that Wood has played, and I think he was great in the first game of the preseason. I still thought he was pretty good against Dallas. He did make some defensive lapses, but overall found his way to contribute. Does a nice job rebounding, ran a nice 4-5 pick and roll with Blake Griffin. He just finds ways to make plays, and everywhere he's gone, he's put up numbers. He's dominated in the G League. Last year with the Pelicans, he put up really good numbers. In the end of the season stretch, he spent with them. He just finds his way onto the stat sheet, and he's popped off the screen in the first two games of the preseason. But if they trust Don enough, and Don had a good second game against Dallas, and they feel Markieff is capable to slide up to the five, then maybe they don't need Christian Wood. But I think you also need to see something from Joe Johnson, too, because he's been out of the league now for a couple years, and you got to watch him in the Big Three, but the NBA is, I mean, we all know it's just a different level of competition. The athleticism, the speed, the talent, it's just all higher at that level. And again, you can't judge preseason. You can't make the most of it. It's not something that you can really, it's not a surefire answer, but you'd like to see something from Joe Johnson, and he didn't. He only played 8 minutes in the first game, didn't really do too much there, didn't play in the second game. That's what kind of makes me feel like he's kind of got a guaranteed roster spot. If the Pistons aren't too worried about getting him out there in preseason and seeing what he can do, just going along with the way that they've talked about him, it just feels like he's going to be on the team, which means, personally, I feel that the Pistons should be looking to make a roster move, whether it's trading Kyrie Thomas or trading Langston Galloway, finding a way to open up a roster spot so that they're able to keep Christian Wood, because I don't know how much I trust Thon Maker. Last year he came onto the team, played decently, but then in the playoffs had his struggles. He certainly still is lacking strength. We'll see about the ball control. He has trouble catching passes down low and finishing inside. And then in the playoffs last year, his foul issues, not being able to handle the size, the speed. A guy like Christian Wood, just with the way that he's played, has been a refreshing look at the backup center spot that just struggled for the Pistons last year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I I think the thing is, though, with Joe is if they keep him, it's strictly locker room presence. It's not going to be because he can contribute on the court. The preseason game, the scrimmage, the game seems a little too fast for him right now. And he still has those ISO Joe tendencies. I'm not sure he can get his shot off like he used to. It's tough. They're going to have to weigh locker room presence versus potential versus team need versus, like you said, and I said, making a roster move to make sure to see if you can accommodate all those things.
Yeah, like both of you guys were saying, with Joe Johnson being a locker room presence, what he reminds me of a lot of is when Cleveland brought in Kendrick Perkins a few years ago during the end of LeBron's second reign in Cleveland. You know, they brought in Perkins. He was in the G League, not really doing much, but they brought him in the locker room because they knew he could be that kind of, you know, locker room presence that they needed, that tenacity, the guy that will is not afraid to get in your face and tell you what's up. I think Joe Johnson could kind of be that guy for Detroit. And like you said, James, it's starting to feel like he does almost have that guaranteed spot due to that locker room presence. I really do personally like the idea of moving on from Kyrie Thomas. I like Kyrie Thomas. I think he has a lot of potential in this league, but based off of what I've seen and the logjam on the wings, I think it's time to move on from him or, you know, like Aaron said, move on from Lakes and Galloway and try to create some cap space. But it's definitely going to be interesting in these next couple weeks to see what Detroit ends up doing with that 15th and final roster spot.
Well, let's move into the final topic of today's show. Let's just get one observation from each person here. One other observation from preseason, and Jacob, I'll start with you first.
Oh, man. One observation I really have is how much that bench unit's already seemed to gel pretty well. You know, like you said, with Luke and Derek and Markieff, it's just seemed like Rose is getting a lot of control and transition and moving the ball where it's supposed to be, whether that's him taking a shot, whether it's him getting a trailer with Markieff for finding Luke to create his own shot. It just seems like that whole entire group has started to gel, at least those three. But if there's one other thing that I've noticed that we haven't really talked about is how well Tony Snell already kind of fits with that starting group. Detroit clearly needed someone that could play 3-and-D with Bruce's inabilities to create for himself on the offensive end. Last year, you know, we really didn't have that third or fourth scoring option behind Blake and Andre. I mean, Reggie was there at times, but we didn't really have that quality fourth option. It seems like Tony Snell has found his way to people kind of forget about him. He's been in the corner. He's shooting those threes. I mean, not all of them are going in, but it's preseason. What do you expect? These guys are still pretty rusty. But I think that Tony Snell could potentially have a pretty good year in Detroit this year. And being it's his third team in his career and his third Central Division team, I think that Detroit could end up being the fit for him.
James, how about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Tony Snell's kind of fitting seamlessly. He's very similar in style to Reggie and Wayne. So you knew that would help, but then he has the size of an actual small forward. So they went and got what they needed at a low cost, and I think he fits right in. I mean, to me, it's the shots Luke's taking. He's clearly being more aggressive. He's clearly more confident. He shot some shots already in the preseason that I just don't think he would have really shot that often last year. Mm-hmm. A guy like a couple inches away from him, deep behind the three, like he's letting it fly. That's what everybody wanted to see. And for him to kind of start off the preseason that way, sending a message that he's going to shoot his shots, I think is not only key for him, but it's key for his teammates to let him know, it's kind of sending a message like, get me the ball. You guys can count on me to shoot those shots this year. And it's kind of the progression that was really needed for this team because they were in need of a score. They got it in Derek, but they could use another one. And Luke was the guy, the internal growth that they really needed. And he started on the right foot.
I think mine is going to be Andre Drummond's development. Something that I've liked from Drummond in the first two games of the preseason, certainly his hustle. He had a really nice game against Dallas, but the way he was kicking out of the post, that's certainly a development that people have been asking of Drummond, and he showed that, and it led to a plethora of open three-point shot opportunities for the Pistons. And when you have those guys on the court, Kennard, Galloway, Jackson, those kind of guys that can knock down those corner threes and Drummond's kicking out to them, that's just going to put more points up on the board for the Pistons. And instead of Drummond getting that offensive rebound, falling away from the basket on a tough shot, and not coming away with any points, him getting that opportunity to go to a reliable three-point shooter who tends to be open because the defense has to all crater down low to try to secure a rebound before Drummond can, it's going to give the Pistons a way to put more points up on the board. But that's going to wrap it up for us today. But before we go, first off, I want to thank Jacob and James for joining me today. James, give us your plug of The Athletic, because certainly people need to subscribe to the journalism that's going on there.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I always pitch it like this. If you're a hardcore sports fan, sports consumes your life, The Athletic's for you. Deep dives, unique features. We set out to kind of be different. I think it allows for all the beat writers to kind of have their own space. It gives everybody a reason to kind of read all of us. But I think with The Athletic, what you're getting is kind of that out of the box story you didn't know you needed, or just we have a little bit more time to do things. So different observations and things like that. It's just a different approach to sports journalism. And if you're a diehard sports fan, I don't think you'll dislike it by any means.
All right. And I want to also give a shout out to my usual co-host, Brennan Johnson, who hosts a show, and Ryan Pay. Ryan's sick, Brennan stuck at work, but Brennan usually hosts a show. I had to step in tonight and do it, and I found myself tripping up on my words far too many times. So I think I need to give him a little bit of credit for the job he does on a weekly basis. So miss you guys, but we were able to hold down and do a great show tonight with James Edwards of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at JL Edwards, III, for standing for the third. And then you can follow Jacob Rogers, the Palace Pistons writer, at JRogersNBA on Twitter. You can follow myself at AJohnsonNBA. You can follow Palace of Pistons on Twitter at Palace of Pistons. Make sure to subscribe to The Athletic. Make sure to subscribe to the Palace of Pistons YouTube page, or wherever you're listening to the Palace of Pistons podcast, on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever it may be. But James and Jacob, again, thanks so much for tuning in for today's show. And thank you to our listeners of the show. We'll see you guys next week here on the Palace of Pistons podcast.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.